Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Ross Kemp. Over the last 18 years, I've made some 90-odd documentaries, predominantly in hostile environments, from Afghanistan to Syria, from El Salvador to the Congo. And it's fair to say that during that time, I found myself in a few interesting situations. I've been shot at, tear gassed, had knives pulled on me, and spears thrown at me. But in all those years, what's impressed me the most is the resilience of the human spirit. Our ability, no matter where we're from, to overcome and make it through to the other side. So, in my new series, The Kemp Cast, I'll be talking to some incredible individuals who all have engaging stories to tell and have themselves overcome some extremely tough moments in their lives. Right now, we're living in unprecedented times, and we should be doing all we can together to get through this as safely as possible. I hope that if you subscribe to the Kemp Cast and hear how my guests overcame their toughest moments, it may help you overcome yours, whether you're going through one right now or you're faced with one in the future. Joining me today is Jamal Edwards. He's the founder of the Urban Music Channel, SBTV, a trailblazer in the world of online content, and a thoroughly decent chap. And I can honestly say, after doing this podcast, we have become good mates. Jamal, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm good.
Yeah?
Sitting in front of a legend.
Well, likewise, my friend. I was just thinking about you. How old are you now? 29?
25 for the next 5 years, but yeah, I'm 29.
29. Yeah. Soon to be 30 in August, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. World famous, multimillionaire, MBE. Where did it all go wrong? It hasn't, has it?
Bits have gone wrong and
yeah. Well, that's what we're here. We're here to find out some of your toughest moments. But I mean, it's been meteoric.
Yeah, it's been very. I'm very fortunate that I'm in the position that I'm in now. And I think as I've grown up, I've been able to just analyze everything a little bit more, because when I was young, I was just living in it, and I was just living in the moment. I was making mistakes, I was learning from them, whereas now it's like I'm very like, all right, that plus that equals that, whereas before it was like just doing it and just learning from it. So now it's much more calculated, so, in a good way.
But how did it start then? How did you end, because you were one of the first, right, to start downloading content onto YouTube?
Yeah.
Why how did that happen?
So I was 13, 14, and I originally was just filming animals in my back garden. I was a massive fan of Steve Irwin. I was like, yes, I'm gonna do this. And then I realized I couldn't do that forever, and a lot of my friends weren't being represented on mainstream media. So I was like, let me look at YouTube. And at this time, I remember my mum coming off the back of X Factor, and I was like,
so I've met your mum, Brenda.
Yeah.
I met her on Loose Women. Mm-hmm. But she's a singer and a dance professional, you know.
West End. Yeah, she's doing all right.
She's doing very all right.
She has done very all right, hasn't she? Yeah. I don't know. It's mad talking to my mum like that, but she's doing.
Were you proud of her when she was in X Factor?
Yeah, I was. At first, I was like, I was a bit embarrassed. Like,
why?
I don't know.
Because it's your mum, isn't it?
Yeah, like on TV, walking into school, like walking in Elon Broadway, people taking pictures, and you're like, oh, what do you do? You stand to the side, and it's like, yeah, you're taking pictures. But and I was known as Jamal from Brenda from X Factor's son. That's literally in school. That's all that I was known
no
as.
Longer.
Yeah,
you known
it,
as that.
It changed around.
How proud is your mum of you?
I think she's very proud.
You think? You know.
Your parents are like, you're going to be
very... Yeah, my mum is my biggest fan, funnily enough. Yeah. And that's what mums are there for. Mums should be there for that.
I think so, yeah. I probably should say, I think she's my biggest fan. I posted something like the other day, which actually showed her as screaming outside Kurt Geiger because I was coming up on the poster and she was literally going batshit crazy. And that was like it was nuts and everyone loved that. It got like hundreds of thousands of views on Twitter because people just like love that. That's a mother son, like that's a son, that's how a mother should be. I want to make my mum proud like that.
Let's talk about those early days. I mean, you grew up in Acton. Mm-hmm. You were born in Luton area, is that right?
Then
moved to Acton.
I
mean, come on, we know it wasn't exactly an easy area to grow up in. You know about street gangs.
Ever
get involved?
Nah, I was in and around them. And unfortunately, I've had people that have died. I've had people that are still in prison. I've had people that have just come out of prison. And I was surrounded by that. For example, when I went to school one morning, someone got killed. Someone got killed on the estate. I went to school in South Acton Estate, which is like one of the biggest estates in West London. It's always been regenerated now. And I just remember, police and everyone saying, you can't go to school today, someone's died. And I'm just like, what? Like, I was like, year two, year three? And I was just, it was just so mad.
So really young.
Yeah, it was mad. Like, and I always just hear of stories of stuff that happened on the estate. But and then I remember when I first... when I was walking and there was boys on the estate shooting at the other boys on the other side and just being young and just asking.
You said shooting then, didn't you?
A gun. And I remember I was young and I was like, I don't know. When I look at it now, I was like, bloody hell. I was just in the middle of but everyone's just out there. I didn't think everything when I was younger. I was just thinking, I asked my auntie, I was like, why, what's going on? Why are they, they've got problems or something like that. But this was say there's a car here on the estate and everyone's chilling here on the bench. It's like, oh, get out of here. Boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, oh shit. And then, we just went home. But
Did you avoid that? How did you manage to avoid that? It's not easy.
I know.
A lot of peer pressure from other people. You hang with friends at school. People say you're just hanging with friends, but I speak to a lot of young men who have ended up in gangs. Some who are in Belmarsh. I've just recently filmed in Belmarsh. And, they said, look, when we were hanging in year two, we weren't called a gang. When we were in year five, we weren't a gang. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, once we left school, once we decided not to go to school anymore, we became a gang.
Mm.
I mean, what's your view on that? I know that you now help and you pump money into kind of youth projects in the area where you came from. Mm-hmm. Do you think that intrinsically is one of the most important things that hasn't been done recently to stop gang crime?
100%, 100%. How that all, I had a family friend who has been down that road. Mm-hmm. And I think he was always sort of looking out for me. Even when I speak to him earlier, he was like, make sure stay in school, don't do that, blah 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 blah, because I think he just saw something where I wasn't like everyone else. And he was the one that said to me the center's there, what's going on with the center, why is it not open? If anyone could get open, you can get open. They won't touch me. If they know I can never get that open. So I used my sort of powers to get open
and start
doing stuff in there. So I think in the early days it was realizing that, but now when I have friends that have come out or friends that have passed away, I'm always I've been put on this journey for a reason. So if I can help in any way I can, I will. For example, my friend opened up a restaurant yesterday. I was like, I'll spend local. And my phone broke. I was like, he's got a business in there. I'll spend local instead of spending my money in big institutions. And I've learned that as I've grown up, to support your own. And I think at a certain time where I was lost, when I was growing up and doing SB, I didn't really realize the worth of actually spending local and checking for people in your actual area, because you just live in the moment and that's it. And you gain a group of new friends, and those friends are good, but you have to have your friends that you grew up with as well.
Keep your feet on the ground.
Yeah, definitely. But when you're like young, it's very
It's impossible.
Yeah, you've got to learn.
Particularly when you know you've been exposed to what you've been exposed to. But going back to sort of just talk about, I mean, the gang thing and the increasing violence, the amount, like more people were stabbed last year than has ever been recorded. They started recording in 1946, a year after the Second World War. It's more people, and I struggle. I'm gonna make documentaries about it. I struggle. You know, look, it ain't just black kids or mixed race kids. It's white kids, every kind of kid.
Yeah, I went to Postle Park, Saracen Street, and I remember, like, when I told people from Scotland I went there, they was like, what the hell are you doing there? And it was giving me a whole history.
But someone who knows.
The area.
Knows the streets, the roads. Mm-hmm. What do you think can be done to stop it, if anything?
That's such a
massive thing. I mean, what do you think about pupil referral units? You know what I'm referring to?
PRUs,
PRUs. I mean, someone turned around to me the other day and they said that they are just the biggest recruitment ground for gangs and for gangsters that there is.
For me, I think it's opportunity. From me working with young people, and with this new youth work that I'm doing, I'm trying to go on courses, learn about child trauma, because I'm like, learning, and I want to be able to deal with the young kids in the right way. And I remember we opened these four centres, and the council got in touch and said, we've got these four kids that are like on the border of, like, if you don't help them now, they're gone, basically. And it was like, I came into the room like this, and I was sitting there. It was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do, like, to speak, because they weren't really interested. They were interested. I was like, oh, what artist do you film? Oh, what? How is he? Is he cool? Like, oh, but like, how much money has he got? Like, what cars he drive? And I'm like, that's not what it's about. Like, and I asked them, I went around the room and I was like, what do you want to do? He was like, one of them said, I don't know. So I was like, all right, cool. If you find out what you want to do, what football team do you support? He's like, oh, Man United. I was like, well, I'm a Chelsea fan. I was like, and then we had a little joke. And I was like, all right, cool. I will sort you out tickets to a Manchester United game if you can stick to come into your probation thing. And I said to every single one of them, I found like each one of their passion points. And I said, all right, cool. I'll reward you if you can keep to that. And the counsellors was like, oh, like, whoa, like. And I realised with young people, it's like, you, like with me, I was going to get kicked out of college, and my mum said, stay in college and you could do SBTV. So that was my thing. Like, I was like, all right, so, cool. And I basically used that. And
so
I
offering
put that
opportunities
to young people.
Or as you say, passion points.
Yeah, and find their passion points. So one of them wanted to do clothing. So I was like, all right, cool. I'll speak to Trapstar or Benjar, who are like big clothing brands within London, and get him experience in there.
So, as you're saying, it's about offering people opportunities.
Yeah, and giving them that sort of, that, the self-belief. It's like when I was younger, I didn't have that. Someone saying, you know what, you're doing good, carry on. And I think that goes a long way with a lot of people that are trying, young people that are trying to do something and might not necessarily get recognized by their peers or by their family, which can be a very lonely place. So like, I always try and make sure I give, if someone tells me an idea and I think it's great, or if I can connect the bridge, I'm always like, let me try and help, but there's only one of me. And that's why I need to like organize my time a lot better, because it's like, if I help myself, I can then help other people. And if I'm not in a good position, place myself, then I'm not in the right place to help others. And that's what I've been really focusing on recently, is trying to, like, me, myself, and I, which will then hopefully help others as well.
Yeah, well, you've got to be in the right position, as you say, in order to be able to pass on what you have to other people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And have you found that it's been chaotic?
Yes, it has. It has definitely been mad.
Give me examples.
It's just like, you've always got to, like, nowadays.
Do people come up to you now and want things off you all the time?
All the time. All the time. But I've learned how to deal with that. Before, I didn't know how to deal with that. I didn't even know how to deal with people, like, coming up and taking pictures with me. I was like, why do you want pictures with me? Like, sort of thing. I've learned how to deal with that. Even when people come up and ask, can I help them with this? Can I help them with that? And it's about me having the right team behind me to make it happen.
How many people in this team then?
Oh, man.
More than there are in Chelsea. Yeah.
Oh, well, up the Chelsea. So I think, yeah, I've got loads of different personal teams, and I've got my SB teams, and I've got the charity side teams. And
just look, yeah. I understand, I'm an old man. Just tell me how SB came into, now, I'm going to say smoky bars, right? I've been a lot of smoky bars in my time, but they stop people smoking in them. Guns. So that doesn't mean that. It means music, apparently. The bars are music.
How
did he come up with that? How old were you?
I was 16. No, sorry. I was 13, 14.
13, 14.
Yeah. But when I changed it into actual business, I was about, I think I was about 19, 20, because I was working at Top Man for 5 years to make money.
What was that like?
It helped, but it was, some bits was really scary, like asking people for a store card. That was really like basically signing people up for a store card that you didn't really know. And I was a very quiet, shy person. So asking someone, would you like to sign up for a store card, for me, was a massive step. But it helped break down a barrier of just talking to people. Because before, it was just me in my bedroom making videos, and no one really used to like ask me anything, or I never really used to conversate with people that much, except for my close network or group. Yeah. So I did that.
Do you think that was what helped sort of started the entrepreneur inside you?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Yeah. I felt like I had, like you said earlier, it's about a solution. And my solution was trying to create a platform for artists that weren't being represented on mainstream platforms. And I find
Is way above what your average 13-year-old is considering.
Not now. Nah. The kids now are scary.
But it's always, isn't it? It's like everything, isn't it? It's the first person. If you're the first person that steps over the line, because you are the initiator, and you have been rightly amply rewarded for that, and you will continue to be, because you're continuously metamorphosizing what you are and what you do and what you see. And that's got to be really important to you. And that's probably why you need. You ever been on a holiday in how long?
I can't remember. Yeah.
Really?
I can't remember. I don't know.
I don't speak to many people who are 29 years old and they go, I don't remember when I had holiday.
No, so I've been like
Are you addicted to it? Are you addicted to work?
Definitely, 100%, 100%. And there was a point in the
time. But there are worse things to be addicted to, right?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is. There is.
You must have seen some of that as well.
What, in terms of?
Like drugs, alcohol, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Particularly in the area that you work in, the music industry.
Yeah, definitely.
They go, you know, drugs, sex and rock and roll, right?
Mm-hmm, definitely, definitely. I feel like with alcohol, for example, though, it's like, you'll go to events, and these events can be every day, and you don't realize you're actually drinking every day, and then you're going out on a weekend, and that can be sometimes like that essentially could be like, you don't realize it, that you're drinking excessively like that because you're with people. It's like it's not like you're going home, and then like that's where it's like really like concerning if you're going home and drinking, which I never did, but I was always at all these events like every day. And it was like, it became, I think I realized that when it just like was taking a toll on like my work, like years ago. And I was just like always at events, and then I'd be waking up and I'd be hungover for like meetings and all that. And I've sort of cut that out now, but there was a point where I wanted to be at all these events, and I thought that would get me further within the music industry because everyone is in these events. And actually, you just need to pick the right events and go to them. You don't necessarily need to drink at these events either. And like, yeah, it's free alcohol. Like some of the events are free, some of them aren't. I mean, it's free, it's like, oh, you take advantage of a free bar. It's like everyone does it. But
Kent would definitely take advantage of the free bar, even at my old age.
So but yeah,
it does. Like, I tell you what, it'll catch up on you eventually. And also, as you say, you want to be on your game, right?
Yeah, and that's
I mean, that's mainly what motivates you, isn't it? Is success. Is success the thing that you want? Have you not already attained that?
I don't think I have.
To define it to me, what's success?
So like there's success in terms of like some of my peers like that are just on another level, like, and that like, in terms of like they inspire me. So whether that
who inspires you?
Of recent, like I've been rating what Stormzy's doing, like, and he's someone that I filmed on the channel.
Years ago. I'm not really, and you know, mate, I'm a Frank Sinatra boy, really. But I was there for punk. I was there. 1977 my first record I ever bought. It was records then. Was the Stranglers. 45. I don't even know what 45s are now. I don't think it's a gun. It is a gun, actually. But it was also used to be a record. But, you know, I thought when you wore the body armour with the Union Jack on it, I thought it was so powerful.
Yeah, and that, like, the moves that he's making, selling out 302s, I'm like, I filmed him, I still film with him, still chat to him, do you know what I'm saying? And it's from him to, like, you've got Ed Sheeran, who's obviously doing bits. You've got, like, the Jesse J's, the Daves. There's so
these
many
people. These are
people
that you found, though, aren't they?
Yeah, I've helped in their career. And I feel like I'm very fortunate to play a little part in their massive career. I always say it's symbiotic. And my main thing was featuring them early before anyone else did. And I did. And that's why I've got a good relationship with them still to this day. And that's what inspires me to find that next generation as well.
When you're a certain age, mm-hmm. you are of that age. You're mm-hmm. of that. You're in tune with that group.
Mm-hmm.
Do you now have to employ younger people to understand what's coming over the hill?
Yeah, or are definitely. You aware of it? Definitely. But I'm. My ears are to the streets. I'll never like. I might be like. I feel like I'm getting a little
bit older
now.
You're getting really old at 29, mate.
Yeah, for when I started.
Bear in mind, granddad's over here.
No. But it's about your mentality, isn't it?
I think that's true.
Like, I feel like age ain't nothing but a number. And you've got to look at it.
No, I'm with you. One of the particularly when you get to my number.
But if for example, you employ people, right?
I have to sometimes. Those two Herberts in the corner.
But for example, with me, I was 17, 18. And I
could have done it then.
You could have done it then.
I don't think so. I can remember that far back.
But you never know. You never know because...
But you are different. I mean, I think what I'm trying to drive at is what... You're still striving for success. Mm-hmm. Why did you take such a different path to other peers in your group?
I don't know because I think I just wanted to be different. I just wanted to be different. I remember...
Grow up thinking that you were slightly different?
A little bit because I found my passion early. And I think like everyone has that inside them.
But you had that support as well, right? I think that's important.
I think I had a bit of support. I could have had more support from my parents. I remember they grounded me when I wanted to do videos. They took my camera away. So I always remember that. I don't know. I always remember that.
So what did you do to get grounded, yeah. man?
Oh, just like wasn't going to college and just like going to areas that weren't safe. Like I remember when I was a young kid, like going on a bus to like Hackney or Peckham.
That
as
ain't
a kid.
Safe.
And I,
sorry,
in my head,
I used to live in Peckham.
No, but
it
in
wasn't
my
safe
head,
in 1982,
to,
mate.
Yeah, but I'm going there to make a video. I'm not thinking, and the thing is, it's in your head. If I
God
thought,
bless Peckham, by the way, I'm just saying that certain areas of it, Peckham Rise Estate that I lived on in 1982 was a pretty hard place to live, trust me.
Yeah, like, I know that those areas are, but in my head, I'm like, if you've got that, it's dangerous, something's going to happen, something might happen. I just went there as just like, I'm doing a job. And touch wood, everyone always asks me on my video shoots, has anything happened to me? Touch wood, nothing's ever happened to me, like where my cameras I've got taken or something's happened. And I'm very fortunate because I've heard some crazy stories of like, where people have gone to certain estates and something's happened. But I've always tried to push that positive
what
energy.
About, here's a question for you, drill, what do you think about it?
Controversial. I feel, people say it's controversial, but it's people that are telling whatever there is.
I'm with you on that. If it's a way of expressing yourself, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. If it's a way of trying to intimidate someone or hurt someone, then I'm sort of against it.
Yeah, like, because people have now taken it and they're making actual, if you can take it away from the intimidation of others, like specifically, then I feel like, because... There's been crazy.
But there'll be people listening to this who won't know what I'm talking about. Explain drill.
Drill is like
I don't
a form
understand
of
it, totally.
Music. How do I? It's like a form of music that it was born out of artists like Chief Keef, who were in the States, and the sort of drill music over here is like hard hitting. It's not rap. It's not hip hop. It's more like.
It's more aggressive, isn't it?
Yeah, I think
it's more energy based, and it's generally got more bad words in it.
Yeah,
sure.
But you could say there's some hip hop songs that I've heard have bad words in it as well.
True.
I find like it's quite localized in London, and people have associated it with loads of different stuff because of the things that people are talking about in the lyrics. But at the same time, I've heard rock songs, I've heard pop songs, I've like that can talk about maybe not. As excessive violence, but there are some songs that I could probably
that encourage violence. There are also
like,
movies
encourage
out there
different
as well.
Stuff. Yeah,
yeah
so
yeah, I agree.
But yeah, people just wanted music to blame on.
It has been specifically targeted, and I've met a lot of young men who say, you know, you're picking on drill, and actually, drill isn't about that. Mm-hmm. But there is a part of it that is about that, and there's no getting away from it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a part. There's a part in that in films, games.
Yeah, agreed.
Like,
agreed.
Agreed. Across the board.
So I'm still interested in this young man who's got, what, has he got a phone? and he's going to record on it, and then he's going to get a camera and he's going to find a platform to put stars or future stars on it. How did it happen?
So a lot of YouTube videos were just funny, like just trying to get my finger.
Cats falling off tables, right?
That was it. There was no original
music.
If
only I'd come up with that one.
I know, that would be amazing. That would be nuts.
Save getting shot at around the world, it really would have done. Do you know what I mean, mate? I could have retired.
Could have gone viral.
If only. Go on. So cats falling off tables.
Yeah, all those sort of videos. And I sort of saw a gap in the market. There were pirate music video DVDs, which was Risky Rose, Practice Hours, Lord of the Mics. And I saw these and I was like, how can I make original content on YouTube? Because their videos were on YouTube, but they were ripped. So I was like, let me do original music content. And then that was the gap in the market.
Because also you'd own it, wouldn't you?
Pretty much, yeah. I did. Yeah. And obviously now it's like, how do you format it even more? Because everyone's on YouTube. What's the next? Yeah. Like, what do you need to do next? What are the new formats?
Do you think that format, I actually went to YouTube for the first time ever in my life to have a meeting with it. And honestly, Matt, I was like that. What? I don't understand. And I still don't understand it. I mean, how do you make money out of it?
So you make money from the amount of views that you get.
Yeah.
Basically. That's just
And they advertise off the back of the views, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Simple as that. And then the next level up.
They told me that they don't like things about murder, mayhem, guns.
They've got strict on it.
Yeah. And that's sort of like,
yeah, because you know what? When I got taken to the Old Bailey twice because of videos.
Really? Tell me.
Yeah, so like,
Old Bailey is a central criminal court. For those who don't know, it's one of the oldest courts, if not the oldest court in the land. And if you do get sentenced from there, you end up in the marsh, in Belmarsh. So go on, how did you get to the Old Bailey?
That was when I was, so that this is a crazy story, because I think this was like in the history of music videos. I don't think I've really talked about it, but you just brought something which pinged it in my head. Was a music video happened, and they said that it was intimidating, and because I added loads of like gory stuff and just like, this is when I was young, at like,
how old?
Gunshots, like, I don't know, I was like 19 or something like that. But it was crazy because they came knocking on my door and I was like, well, you've been a hard man to find, Jamal Edwards. Like,
police?
Not police, it's like, what's the next one?
Lawyers? Detectives?
No. Yeah, barristers? Like undercovers or...
Undercover cops?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. But I remember knocking on my door and this one I was living at my mum's and I was like...
Well, ain't that hard, I'm living at my mum's.
Yeah, but they said it was very hard to find me, like, I don't know.
One of the most... influential men in downloading music.
When I was 19, no one knew. Bro. I was just making videos, and they knew about SBTV, but they didn't know it was me that's filming the video. So like,
fun. Okay.
How
did you end up in the Old Bailey?
Because of the music video that they said was intimidating. It was intimidating people, and there was a massive case that happened.
And in the area, it was thrown out. I take it.
I think the guys went down, but...
The guys that you had filmed.
Yeah, on the video, yeah. But yeah, and at that time, this is when my parents were like, what the hell, like, what is my kid doing? Because like, if I had to get taken there to stand up in court and all of that, there was like, what sort of videos am I making? And that's where my parents was like, you need to sort of change the videos that he was making. But that's who I was around. That's who I was hanging around with. Those are the
people. So you're representing what you were seeing, right?
Like, exactly. And I didn't want to change that too much. But I did add on. So I started filming singers. Imagine that. My mum's a singer. So she was like, why don't you mix up with some singers? So it's not all like that sort of stuff. Like,
Are we thanking Brenda for the move?
Thank you, mum. A little bit. A little bit.
Yeah.
She'll probably be like, wow, you said thank you. But no, that was a factor of it. And I just wanted to branch out a little bit from what I was doing. And I felt like if I branched out, I could bring a new audience to what I was originally filming. And that was the main thing of like connecting worlds. Like that's my thing. I just want to keep on connecting worlds.
Do you think that the music industry and the media industry in general is institutionally racist? Can I just be honest with what I see?
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot more white middle class people involved in it than I do any other
type. Yeah, it's definitely. Do you know what it is? I felt like me coming up with my certain with a group of my mates, they would be like, "Oh, you're black. You can't get into there, whatever." And for ages, that was my mindset. So when I said I want to go work at MTV, I want to do BBC, it's like, yeah, right. I mean, look at you, like, do you see anyone that looks like you in there? And for years, that was my mindset, and I had to break out of that mindset because I would have kept thinking, nice to, and that would have really made my self-belief like low. And I felt like when I applied for an internship at MTV, I didn't get it, but I didn't blame it because of the color of my skin. I just blamed it because maybe I might not have been good enough. And then that was the that was the mindset I got into, was more about my quality of work than the color of my skin. And if I didn't get out of that mindset, I would have blamed everything, and I would have not tried to go for stuff because I was scared that I would get denied because of the color of my skin. And I find a lot of my mates are still stuck in that mindset, and then that's one of the biggest mindsets you can break out of growing up on an estate in like London, surrounded by what you see, like whether that's your black mate, white mates, whatever. And I think that was an important thing that I had to break out of. And clearly, at a certain point in my career, everyone that I employed was older than me. And it was such a mad experience for me because I remember doing a video and the cameraman be filming, and in my head he's doing it wrong. But because my mum taught me to have respect for my elders, I never said anything. And he's working for me. So I'm like biting my lip because I'm like, I can't say, because he's got, obviously he's older than me, has way more years experience than me. And that was a big thing that I had to overcome as well, was like dealing with people that were older than me and telling them what to do. And it just felt weird. Like for me at that age, I just felt totally weird. And then it changed when I started getting older, and then I employed younger people than me. But that was a big thing, because there were so many things that went wrong and I never talked it up. And I just, because I just...
So you saw people making mistakes in front of you and you were too...
Yeah, I was too shy, timid, like...
Too well-mannered?
Yeah, like, I was just like, got respect for your elders. Obviously, there's a way that you do it. I'm not going to say, yo, that's the camera.
There are some people that do that, and I've been on the end of that.
Yeah, but I've not learned that. So everything that I've done has been a trial and error. Everything that I've like learned has been like looking at other things that wherever possible I can get inspiration from. So it was just a new thing to learn. Like now I think I'm...
Do
quite
you ever
cool
sit
boss.
Down and just zone out?
From tomorrow I will be.
You go on holiday?
Well, going on a retreat.
Do you reckon you really will?
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to bring my laptop with me, but like doing HIIT, boxing, yoga, like proper good food, breakfast, lunch, dinner, hiking, Sahara Desert. And I think it's the first time where I can just like remove myself from everything and just...
I bet you film it.
I'll hopefully come back
a new
man.
I bet you film
man.
It. I bet you download it, and I bet you...
I definitely will be filming it.
Mate, and it's going to get millions and millions of hits. I think that's going to happen though, isn't it?
Hopefully, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. But I feel like everyone, in terms of when you're working hectic, you need some yourself time. And I find I didn't give myself any sort of me time to just sort of step back and look at how things are going and then attack the game again. And I find that is, when you're in it, it's very difficult.
Do you think that the content, the online content is so big now, it's become oversaturated, that it lacks the immediacy or sometimes the intelligence that it had when it was in its infancy?
Definitely. That's why you've got to come up with formats. For me, I find my niche is collaboration and storytelling. I find like artists, if they want to get something off their chest, they always call me, or I will call them and tell them to talk a bit different. Like we was talking about, unfortunately, Cadet, who passed away like roughly a year ago.
He's a rapper, yeah?
Yeah, this is a rapper from London. I recorded a video. I would love to play it to you after, actually.
Yeah,
but
man.
I recorded a video of him, and he came to the office. He was talking like loads of like lyrics, like, I'll rob you, like all this sort of stuff. And I basically didn't put it up because I felt I wanted to change the sort of topics that were, I wanted to broadcast an SB. I wanted to broadcast much more inspirational messages. And he called me loads of times, and he talked about this in his video. He was like, Jamal's not picking up the phone, like why not, why not? And basically I said, I want to hear more about your story. Why as why have you in that scenario, why have you done that? And he basically came back and done the most amazing rap of why it was, like how his family was disjointed, like loads of stuff. And I was just like taken aback. And from that, I said to everyone, I want to hear about your story. Tell me something that I don't know or educate. So then I had like Miss Banks was calling me, and she was like, this is another female rapper. She was like talking about her abusive relationship that she had with her dad. And she put that down in the lyrics. And I'm like, wow. And people were saying to me, I was giving them a platform to just release what it is from outside of the normal music that they do. Mm. And then I found that was my niche that I needed to do, like storytelling. If you've got something to say, I'll give you the platform, come and say it. And that was my like unique selling point in terms of all the content that was on YouTube. People could just come to me and just get stuff off their chest. And then that really worked. I did that. I've been doing that, and I still carry on doing that today.
Do you think that now it lacks originality?
A lot of it does, but at the same time, there is a lot of amazing music that's out there. Like UK music at the moment is the best it's ever been, like, and it's so exciting.
It's always been good though, isn't it?
It's always been good, but it's not on the stage that it is now. Like you're getting, Stormzy sold out like three O2 arenas. Like when I was filming him like 10 years ago or whatever, we would have never, do you know what I'm saying? Because the artists that were selling out then was like the Americans.
I wouldn't want to name names, but are there some that you've seen that have changed dramatically in the time that you've known them in terms of they've got big headed?
Not really.
Or to you anyway?
Yeah, not to me, I don't feel, and I don't really see them, I don't know if they would to others, because
But what about you? I mean, I've just met you, but you seem incredibly grounded, incredibly kind, very much aware, and I think that's a lot to do with your upbringing and also your actual, just your mental fitness. You're an incredibly bright man. Mm. How have you kept your feet on the ground? Is it friends? Is it family?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the friends, the social circles that you hang around with.
Like, MBE. What was it like getting an MBE?
It was nuts. I took my stepdad, my mom, and my sister. And it was just, I think that was the moment where there was like, I think the first moment when my parents got off my back was when I had a Google Chrome advert. I think a big part of it was getting my parents off my back to allow me to do what I needed to do. So when their friends started saying, your son's on TV, and they're like, what do you mean my son's on TV? So all them times I'm up in my bedroom, see, I told you I was doing something. And like, that was the first moment.
Just a little thing.
Yeah. Like, and then when I got the MBE and they see it, I was like, wow, like, do you know what I'm saying? And like, there's other little things. Like, I did a video of Chris Packham, for example. And then my granny was like, oh my gosh, I want to meet Chris Packham. And it's like certain people that I've met over the years, like just allow my parents to give me a little bit more freedom. Obviously now I have complete freedom, but when I was growing up and when I was underneath their underneath the wing.
But do you think if they hadn't done that you could have gone on a totally different path?
Maybe, because there was times, for example, in school, I found a phone, which I didn't realize was a line. I didn't know what a line was back then. I found it in my high school, and I took it. I was like, I'm having this phone. But obviously everyone knew it was like nice. Like people found out I had the phone. And I remember the guys coming to my mum's house, knocking on the door, saying, oh, hi to my mum, knew my mum, took me up to the estate, and I got beaten because I kept the phone. And I didn't realize the phone was a drug line. And when that happened, I was like, I don't want this life. But then, even after that,
No, that's enough. You said enough, right?
yeah.
But isn't that interesting? Isn't that fascinating that you pick up a phone?
I found it.
I'm in a phone.
Yeah.
And they found out?
Yeah. But I knew the guys. But I was just like, I'm keeping that.
Still got slapped around.
Yeah, because it was like, I lied and I was like, I didn't have no phone.
I wouldn't have
wrong mistake.
Bash.
But I didn't know until after. What is a line?
But you see I'm trying, I know that you're very bright. You are very different from we're all unique and we're all individual. But I'm just, and no one can do what you've done again. It's been done and you were the first person to do it. But what I'm trying to trying to find or see. Is there some thing that could be implemented that would help other people, no matter where they are, whether they're in Scotland or Ireland or Massachusetts or in Moscow, mm-hmm. that they could, to follow in your footsteps, as it were?
Yeah, I think everyone has the potential in them.
I agree.
Like, and it's just at what point in your life do you unlock it? Because I feel like I unlocked mine when I was 15. My friend's gran unlocked hers when she was about 75. She's now got her own knitting business up north, smashing it, and she's left her job. So, like, I don't know when people will find it, but it's like you need to experience as much as you can to have that, to find out when it's unlocked. And I was,
I'm and also very, when it's unlocked, to actually
carry it through,
put it, implement it.
Yeah, right? Implement it. Yeah. And I find I had the right tools around me, but again, you still need that self-belief. Because I remember walking into a room, like cameras, mics, like this. I was interviewing Kelly Rowland and I walked in. I was like, I can't do this. I got to walk back out. Because I had like this really cheap camera. Everyone had these massive cameras. And I found my presenter the day before because I didn't want to do the interview. And I think it was like, I don't know what TV production company it is, but literally I said, are you sure? Like, this is Kelly Rowland. Like, look at my camera. She's got these massive big cameras, mics. I've got no mic. Sorry. I've got no tripod. I'm going to hold it with my hands. And I found that was like really testing for me because I was going to walk out and not do the interview because I was embarrassed because of I walked in and I saw all these lights and cameras. Mm-hmm. But I think the difference was like I had that like self-belief.
Yeah, the vision.
Vision to be like, I
it doesn't matter what the size of your camera is, mate. Nah, if you're looking through it and seeing nothing.
Mayfair Hotel, which I'm dressed. I'm like, I didn't think I would even walk in. I was like, look at everyone. Like, they're going to stop me when I walk in. Like, I was just making up so many excuses in my head not to do this thing. I did it in the end. It's still online on YouTube. And it's funny because I interviewed Kelly Rowland 3 years later and I had like a team of 20. It's like, oh, you talk. Like, I'm glad you saw me on my days when I was just me and like my presenter. And I think that's the beauty of people that have grown with me. Like I've shown like the progression. Cause if I just came and I had like big lights, big cameras, I'd be a bit thinking like, where'd you get that from? Where's your story? Where's your history? Like, and I find like people can see videos where I'm like shaking it. I'm like nervous. Like it's just, and I find the journey, it's all about the journey. And yeah, so back to your question, it's like everyone has that potential in them. It's just unlocking it. And then
and when you unlock it, grabbing it.
Yeah. So like with the young people that I work in the center, I always try and deal with every person like it's their own. Like I think one wanted to be a mechanic. I have a deal with Mercedes-Benz vans. So I was speaking to them. I was like, can we get an apprenticeship for this kid? It didn't work out, but these are the things that you need to be trying to do. And that trial gave that kid more. It's like, all right, no worries, Jamal.
Sorry, but I've just got one of the things I do know about you. How do you become an ambassador for Mercedes-Benz?
It's the vans, by the way.
I know, man. It's a Mercedes-Benz, though,
no,
isn't it?
But it's the van. I mean? It's the van.
It's the van, man. It's a van. I don't care, it's a van. It's a Mercedes-Benz van.
I hear you, yeah. So that, I did a talk and the marketing manager was there. And I said I wanted to create a vlog, day-to-day life vlog, interview people in a car, whatever. And she basically went for it. And the rest is history. But the thing is with that, they've never had an ambassador before. And that's what I like about trying to create and open doors, a pioneer in that area where it's not really known. And this is an ongoing partnership that I have at the moment. But yeah, that was, again, I find people need to be a little bit cheeky and ask for stuff. So I've had young people come up to me.
So that young man that was in Topshop going, look, do you really want a loyalty card? That man's gone now, isn't he? He's still there.
Yeah, he's still there.
But you've got to be a bit cheeky and you've got to grab the opportunity when it arises.
Yeah, and I've told a lot of people that as well.
Top of their hill to see what's coming over next.
Yeah, and that's the knowledge that hopefully I feed back to the young people that I work with. There's one guy at the moment that's like so on it. His name's Strels. He's one of the young people that attends the club. And he's just on my phone all the time, nonstop. And I respect that because he's so hungry. And he's one that when I have projects, I'm going to bring him through because I want to give him the opportunity. And I find if a young person has that want and that need, it will happen. The same thing with the kids when I met from the violence reduction unit at... the violence reduction unit at Ealing Council, the kids that I met there, the kid that wanted to do the clothing, he was like, I want to do the clothing. I'll do anything for the clothing. And it's those like kids as well as the others that you really need to help.
There aren't enough options out there. That's what I think across the board.
There isn't. There is,
but you're creating something. You are. But shouldn't that be down to government to do that?
You can wait around, but if you do it, it makes them look at it and be like, you know what, we need to get involved. And now I'm talking to the council much more, and they're very supportive of what I'm doing. But at first, I raised the money via Google and a Wellcome Trust, and then I then made that happen and worked with a lady called Yara to build that. But now the government's looking at it like, whoa, you've done this, you've done it. Well, I'm doing it. Like, what else can we do to help?
Because you've done it first, though, right?
Pretty much.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Talk about when you were really young. I mean, your stepdad, yeah, and your mum, big influences on you. Do you know your dad, your biological dad?
No.
Do you want to?
Yeah, I'd like to, but like I always have this conversation with my mum. No, I don't always have this conversation with my mum, really, because every time I ask, it just comes to like. Because I'm like, I want to know that side of my family to a certain degree. But then something happens where I've got friends that don't even know their dad or their dad's dead. And I'm just like, I should be thankful. My stepdad is like the best. Like I still chat to him now. He's helped me out so much. But yeah, I'd like to know the other side. Mm. And my mum said she doesn't know. She doesn't know. She said to me, like she didn't know she was pregnant with me. And I was like, I got over that. If I was not intended, I don't care. It's fine. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here or whatever. But I still would like, I've done the ancestry thing. Even if, so basically this is what happened. I had a ancestry thing and then they tested this guy that was in Luton. And I think my mum was saying, oh, like, Jamal, you're in the public eye, whatever, I need to protect you. He's like a addict, like really bad, like he's a really bad guy, basically. And I said, all right, I'm a big man now, let me experience that for myself. Even if he turns around and doesn't want to know me, at least I know, not someone else telling me that. And I said, if he wanted to help, I will help him. Even like, that's just in my nature. But I'm still on this journey. I'm on this journey at the moment of like figuring that side out. That's always there. It's not always there. It's there sometimes when I'm like, oh, I wonder. But because I'm so busy, it comes up every now and then.
Mm.
Yeah.
You're very honest, aren't you? I like that.
I know. I was stopping myself. I don't know if my mum wants me to say that. But it's out there now, isn't it?
And do you know what though? But because you've voiced it in such a very eloquent way, in such an honest way, it's going to help other people deal with it.
When I say that, they think I have like, I know, they're like, right, you don't know that. And I'm like, yeah, but like from the outside, you're like, you, why would you think that? But it's always because I don't talk about it as much. But yeah, I don't
but your
know.
Stepdad, you absolutely adore.
Yeah, my stepdad. Yeah, and it's mad because, and this is the other thing. So my stepdad's white, and I remember being a young kid going to Burton upon Trent and walking in a shopping market, and me and my mum and my sister was the only black people. I remember for a period of time I felt really uncomfortable, but going back to London, I was very blessed that I got out of London to the countryside to see the frogs. Back when I was younger, I loved the frogs.
The frogs, man.
Yeah, the frogs, because it was just like countryside. It's such a beautiful thing.
It is,
most
man.
People in my estate have never even left the estate or yeah. Acton. And I was very fortunate and very lucky that I was able to go and experience that. And that's why I didn't really blame it to the color of my skin, because half my family was white. Like when I'd be going to... And when people say, like, it's because you're black, I got it, but I didn't get it because of my stepdad.
When I was a young man, I was at drama school, and my best mate at drama school happened to be a black lad guy called Joe Williams. And that's why I ended up living on the Peckham Rise estate. Mm. I was probably the only white kid on that estate. Boy, could I run fast then. I was running 100 metres for Essex. Yeah. I was playing the Saracens under 21s. Mm. But I could run fast because I needed to. And it wasn't just me they were chasing. They were chasing everybody. Don't get me wrong. I had one of those original, they were retro bags, Adidas bag. I had an original one, mate. And tell you what, that used to be behind my shoulder as soon as I got off the bus, and it was zip into Saw Court, get in there and lock the door.
Nuts.
But yeah, but talking about, you know, I would go to the family Sunday lunch, you know, mac and cheese and all this stuff, Jamaican stuff.
Oh, see, and, I had that, but I was opposite. So I got to have the...
The roast dinner.
Yeah.
So, but Joe would come to mine, and Joe... spoke a bit like that, you'd probably think he was a 40-year-old white man that smoked too many cigars. But actually, he was a black lad from Leeds, Chapeltown.
Chapeltown, I know Chapeltown.
Yeah. But, you know, I have to say, it was weird sometimes being the only white guy at the table, I have to say.
And didn't you have your, like... parents or brothers?
Oh yeah,
mum and
dad. This is me as well.
These
are just people that were Joe's relations that lived in the area that we occasionally saw.
I get that. I totally understand that, because that was like me up.
Didn't happen very often, but when it happened, it was quite weird.
So
future.
I recently worked on a campaign. Again, random, and this is what about collaborations with the Department of Education to get more kids interested in creative apprenticeships, where we came up with a campaign to create a music video, and basically every single aspect of it was helped put together by apprentices. So we created a track, we did a PR event, in Hull, we went up to Hull, we did the music video, and on the music video we have lighting technicians, makeup stylists, assistant directors, and these were all apprentices, so it was all put together by apprentices. And that was a campaign that when the Department of Education came, I was like, really? The government, like, want to do a campaign around apprentices? I was like, I love that. And but part of me was like, we can do a music video, but they might say no, like, do you know what I'm saying? Because you never know. But it's a grime track, it's like a hard grime track done by P Money, and that sort of stuff is what I want to do, carry on going forward. But everything that I do, I want to have an aspect of either involving the young people from the community or people from youth centres, or just giving aspects to it. So like, I've got collaborations coming with like V&A's and British Library, and I'm trying to get young people to assist on the shoot so they can get experience. So if something comes in, I always ask, can we get like, for example, I've been asked to go on a show. I'm like, can I get young people to come and sit in the audience? Like, it's just giving them the experiences that I necessarily didn't have when I was younger. And I want to do that through all the work that I do going forward. And that's simply for the fact of setting up these centres and seeing how it can change these kids' lives and me getting older.
What were you getting older at 29?
Yeah.
What about the pressure?
Oh.
Mate, because you're an MBE, you're a multimillionaire, but you're more than that. You're a role model. You're a hero, if you don't mind me, of your community.
Mm-hmm. The pressures are what? The pressures are being in a public eye, like everyone, like there would be times I'd be walking and people's like, oh, like, why don't you do SBTV anymore or something like that? And it's like, I still do SB, but it's like balancing the personal brand, Jamal Edwards, and the SB brand are doing it in a way that helps both.
They can come together.
Do you know what I'm saying? But at a time, it's battling each other. And I find that
But the pressure, I'm talking about the personal pressure that you're under now, because you've been so successful, because, you know, the Google Chrome, the ambassadorships, SB,
I think the pressure of keeping relevant and the personal pressure of working.
If you don't wear the right top? That's why, I always wear a black top, man. Do you know what I'm saying? Go sick,
SBTV.
But I mean, you know that pressure of the way you look is very important in the music industry. You're in, I don't know, whether you're in classical music or whether you're in grime, whatever you're into, your image and all that stuff. The consistency.
Everyone thought I was a devil because I had skull rings.
So do I.
Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I think the pressure comes from caring about what people think about you. I think that is a massive,
about that?
I used to.
So did I used to.
I used to worry
a lot less. But you've come to terms with things a lot quicker than most people do. I think
you are a very old head
on young shoulders.
But say, for example, like you, if you look at the generations, that might have been taking you for a longer time. Mm. It's taken me a shorter time. It's taken the other kids even.
I'm sure it's less time. Do you think we're moving too quickly?
I think, due to the internet, we are moving very quickly.
Is that out of control?
I think social media etiquette should be taught in schools. I've said it from ages ago.
I'm loving this. Say that again. Say it louder.
Social media etiquette should be taught in schools from a young age, because social media can change the way people put themselves out on the internet from a very young age, but that will stay with you forever. It'll come and haunt you when you're 30 years old because you've tweeted something. And I find that is so important. And I've said
What about bullying on the internet?
Yeah,
sexual bullying, that stuff.
That comes underneath. So, how do you carry
yourself?
Do you
not think that platforms have a responsibility to look at that?
100% they do. And I think the more that people talk about it, like we're having this conversation, the more that people will take it on board. But it's so important that
people commit suicide because of it. Yeah. There are people turning to drugs because of it. There are people having to move out of their area because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is my personal view. I just think that platforms have a responsibility. I mean,
platforms used to take a hold of my life.
But also, we as users of it, we have a responsibility, don't we? Mm-hmm. As you say, that social etiquette thing is really important. But how do you teach that?
I think it's about showing a realist. So, for example, at the end of last year, I was feeling absolutely terrible. I didn't want to leave my house. And I basically took a picture of my face, and it was wow. And I sent it to my group. So I was like, look, I'm thinking of posting this on Instagram because I want to show I'm having a shit time right now. Like, everything is not glitz and glam.
For the man that everybody thinks is perfect.
Yeah, I posted it to my story. I posted my story and I was like, I'm feeling terrible right now. I know it's not all, I can't remember the caption. It's not all glitz and glam. There's some days where you just feel like, and I got so many messages from it because it was just like, you're being real. And I find that helps the conversation, where it's not just at this event, it's not just this award, it's not you're with this famous person. Mm. It's about showing the days that you are feeling a little bit low. And I try and do that as much as possible as I can, to try and be as real as I can, which hopefully influences other people to do the same.
No, I mean, there's a lot of mental health issues out there at the moment, and people still don't want to talk about that. And the nature of what we're doing is also we talk about the toughest moments that you've faced. The person opposite me has faced. Mm-hmm. What would you say has been the toughest moment so far in your 29 years?
I think there's been loads of tough moments, but one of the tough moments was finding out my mum had breast cancer, because I've known people that have lost their lives lost their mums, their sisters, their aunties to breast cancer. My mum was at a very late stage. This was a good few years ago where my world was so hectic and my world just slowed down.
So your career's going.
Yeah, it slowed completely down. Yeah. And part of me is becoming a social recluse, and the other part is I got to stay strong. And my mum kept saying to me, when she was losing her hair and and she was being so positive, and I was like, where are you getting this positivity from? She's like, I got it from you. I was like, all your self-belief and all that has helped. That's what I do. She goes singing, walking into the hospital and all this stuff. And I remember like, it was just a mad, like, cause I, like, she was, it was at a very last stage. They caught it very late. And she said the self-belief got her through, but I was being quite negative. I was like, not negative, but I was like,
Did you consider the fact that you might lose her?
A little bit, I did, yeah. But I didn't know how to, like, cope with that. Like, I didn't know how to cope with it. Like, I was just, I did, obviously, cope with it.
You moved back home, then?
Yeah, I did.
And you stopped doing stuff?
Yeah, I did for a little while. And my team was very supportive of, like, Jamal, take your time with everybody you need to do.
Stopped, everything stopped, right?
Yeah.
There's not many, I don't know how many, but, you know, you, to do that, give that, give up everything, that shows the love that you have for your mum, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think.
Was that, how long did that last for?
About a year.
A year?
Yeah. But it was mad, because I remember, like, I don't know, it was just mad, because I remember getting...
So you, there was you, your stepdad, and your mum living in the house.
And my sister.
And your sister. And your mum's losing her. She said, what, she...
Yeah, doing chemo.
Which is a tough thing to go through.
I don't know, but I find so many, like...
Tough for her, but also sort of tough for you, yeah?
Yeah, because she...
To see your mum going through that, having that pain, and also having that shadow hanging over her.
Yeah, but when I look at it, I'm very, like, now my mum's gone through it and she's in remission. I'm very, like, because I've known people that have lost their it could have been worse.
it could be a lot worse. I put
that in my brain.
Do you think about that a lot? I mean, my dad's got through prostate cancer only last year, and I think about that every night. I think about a lot of things. I thank the powers that be.
Positivity. I think it's the positive.
Yeah, you've got to turn those moments into positivity.
Yeah, and I've learned that from my mum. She taught me. She said I taught her.
But you are an incredibly positive person, but this was the darkest moment in your 29 years, yeah?
I think, yeah, it definitely was. Because I was just like, where's my, like, self-belief gone? It's just like,
which in a black hole. Your self-belief is very, very strong, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, but it wasn't. It was like when she was like,
did it make you question,
through
did
it,
it make you question success? Did it make you question everything that you had?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And it made me think, like, I then signed up, everyone to Aviva, for example. Didn't have it before, didn't have any of that. It's just little things like that I didn't really, I took for granted. Do you know what I'm saying? And I needed to, I just sort of changed, like, health is wealth. Like, it made me realise health is wealth. And, like, looking after...
And after something people. You can't because buy. Because there's times before that... the best specialist, but you can't actually buy the health in the first place.
You can't.
Place.
And I find, like, I didn't spend as much time.
You can't buy time.
I didn't spend as much time with my close ones and my family. And after that, like, I found out, like, my auntie Pammy's, like, one of the head in the family. She was Margaret Thatcher's private secretary, and she's got an MBA as well. I know, my history of my family is just on another thing. But I know,
Hang on, stop.
No,
stop,
wait. Pausing. No, but let me explain where this... But basically, this whole thing that happened with my mum, I didn't know that, and I don't catch up with my family enough because I'm so lost in my world. So, like, obviously, my I didn't know my grandparents, so my mum's mum and dad died in a car crash when she was four. So she was like, she used the church to sing and blah, 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 blah. And this is what I'm saying. One thing that I've always been, like, I've got obviously my stepdad's mum, my granny, that I call my granny. But I remember, like, the grandparents' relationship is so, with my friends that I see, is so strong. And I remember, like, my mum just being like, this is when she started singing, she went to the church. My auntie Pam then started to look after her. And then I remember when mum got ill, she's like, Jamal, you don't even, like, go and check your auntie or find out about her. Do you know who your auntie Pam is? And I'm like, well, she's this. And then it made me be like, I need to spend more time before they touch wood. I don't know, like, they leave the earth. And that's what that, there's so much, like, things within that whole moment taught me a lot.
So what you're saying is, in a minute, your toughest moment in a way was your best moment, because it made you appreciate really all the other things that you had apart from that success.
And I still feel like I can appreciate it a little bit more. And I'll make an effort to. And that's why my mom's always been like that, because she didn't really have her parents growing up. She's always very protective of me and my sister. And I didn't really understand it. It was just a mad that my mum and her brother, my Uncle Rodney, didn't grow up with parents.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's just a bit. And that's why I always feel bad, a little bit. My mum's trying so hard to do what she's doing. And I try so hard to put her, to try and help wherever I can, whether that's sharing her content. But then yesterday, you don't like all my Instagram posts. I was like, I set up your Instagram. You didn't want to be on Instagram or Twitter. I set it up when I told you. You know what I'm saying? Little things like that. But but then I'll be like, it could be worse, because I've known people that don't have anyone around them. And that's what makes me, I guess when you say what keeps me grounded, is I know people from so many different backgrounds. You would probably like you would never believe the sort of people that I know in different groups. Mm. And when I speak to them and
you hear their story,
and I'm like, fuck, what am I got to go? I've got my mum. Mm. I've got do you know what I'm saying? And that's why I'm very like how I am, because I'm fortunately, and I'll try and help these people as much as they need help. I know some people that are in the most
dire straits, right?
Just crazy. And that's why I'm very thankful, and I be positive because of that.
That makes you very grounded, mate.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people in your situation would be like that.
Or experience it. And I always try, with me, I've got friends that are really just super rich, so bored, they don't know what to do. They love my mates from this day. They're like, bring it. I love that. And I love that, me, I get goosebumps.
Talk about
connecting those worlds.
Yeah, well, that is a fantastic thing to be able to do. I mean, how important is the money to you?
At one age, it was so important. At now, it's not important.
Is that because you got it?
No, I've lost.
Ups and downsies.
Yeah. So when I've got my first check, all right, so if I take it back to when I got my first check, not my first big check, I got my first top man check, and I remember I wanted to match my YouTube check with my top man check. So, and I remember going home and I was like, Mum, Dad, look, I have this check. Please let me leave top man. Not saying top man wasn't great, because top man taught me a lot of things.
Yeah.
But I wanted to focus on SB, and I think it was £500. Mum's like, this is not sustainable income. How do you know this is not going to be your check? If you don't get the same amount of views, your check's going to be less next month. I was like, oh my God. So for a period of time, I was doing college, doing SB and working at top man, going on the bus, editing videos. And then my YouTube checks started beating my top man checks regularly. And I was like, look, there's 3 months of checks which are higher than my top man check. Can I leave? So, all right, cool, leave. So I left, and then that's when I started. Where am I going?
You put all your energy now, rather than splitting it three ways.
You're
putting it all into one thing.
So I did that, and then I did that for a period of time. And then my first big brand check came in. And to be honest, I had nothing to, I spent it. I had nothing to show for it. And it's funny, you would think, so my mum is an accounts payable manager. You would think your mum, who is good with numbers, would, and then my dad is a mortgage advisor. So at this period of time, they're saying, do that, put in property, do that. I did not listen.
What did you spend it on? Love it.
I remember there was a time.
How old were you?
I don't know, 22, I think, or 23. Mm. But I had 22. But that's what I'm saying. The kids now that are 21, 20, they're buying their parents' houses and cars and that. I'm like, yes, I respect that. Putting their money into stuff that is good. And at that time, unnecessarily, I was giving, helping around the house or whatever, but it wasn't as I'm doing now, later on in my age. And I find... I just bought loads of chains. The role models I was looking at was totally wrong. Loads of role models. It was dumb.
Yeah, give me some bad role models. Can you name them?
Oh, no. Just, I don't know, no.
Oh, no, I can imagine, but let's leave that there.
And then I bought, and then I lost a lot of money because...
Can you tell me?
Just not learning about my VAT tax and my receipts. That's one of the most important things that I tell everyone, every school I go to, learn about your VAT, your tax, your receipts, and legal and finance. Your accountant and your lawyer should be your best mates, 100%. And then I lost a lot.
And then I'm back up again. And that's happened. It's happened for the past, since I was about 15. And I'm very fortunate now to be in a good position where I've got a very good solid foundation, and I find that this is my new life. Because like a few years ago, I necessarily wasn't in the best financial position or whatever. Like it wasn't going well. And I feel like I've been blessed to carry on what I'm doing and still be relevant enough for people to care about it. And I said to myself,
but you're continuously, what I know about you now is that you are continuously reevaluating where you are and what you are by the second, by it was said to me, by the minute.
Yeah. If people don't care about you, I said, all right, I'm gonna change the job. I'm gonna stop. Because that is your consumer and your audience is what puts you here today. And I'm very thankful for that. Very true. If I'm like, someone took a picture of me on the train the other day and said, oh, nice to see you in the underground. It was so freaky. Just sent it to me on Twitter. And I was like, every time I leave the house, people like, Jamal, like even when I'm walking here, like some guy stopped me. I was like, wow. I was like, what? And I said, when that doesn't happen anymore, that's it. I'm done. Done out here. That's what you call it. But I've always basically the people, it's the people, they put me where I am today. For the same.
And you're only as good as your last job, and you treat everyone with respect, unless they're disrespectful to you. But
yeah.
I have to say, I've never really encountered that. I want toughest moments. What about, is there a fear there? Is there a fear inside you that this could all go?
And I if have it a did, fear. You it's a really dark fear.
You can say you can walk away. Tell me what your dark fears are.
That I'm not going to wake up. I don't know. Like, I feel like sometimes I go to sleep and I'm like, I don't know. I think about death a lot. It's really bad. But it's just because I've seen it.
Is that something to do with the skulls?
I don't know. I just think I've seen a lot of death. I've been around a lot of death where it's like,
tell me about that.
You could be gone.
What death? Who have you seen?
No. I've not seen anyone die, but I've had people that I'm close with that
die.
That have died. And I just feel like I've got to live every day like it's my last, and I feel like I just think about.
People used to say that a lot about me.
Is it?
Yeah.
But I
tell you what happens eventually. You get closer to dying if you live every day like it's your last.
Is it? No, but I mean, like, do you think, like, you wanna, like, what did I see? I knew someone that just died in their sleep from, the heart just stopped, and I thought. And it just made me think, how do I want to die? I don't want to die painfully. I want to die like peacefully. If I want to die, I want to die in my sleep. And then it just starts, and then my head, but that's when my head just starts going in a spiral.
Don't start talking yourself into dying in your sleep now,
I
right?
Don't mean like,
because
but
you know what? This will go out and then you'll go boom in your sleep.
No. But I mean like,
I can't afford the lawsuit. All right.
But the aspect of living every day, like, don't look like you've got to. That's just down to, I don't know how to put it into, it sounds really dark, but I don't know how to put it into in a sentence. It's like, people around me have died. I've had people that have been very ill. Some of them are still here, some of them aren't. And it's like, some of the things that, like me booking Marrakesh, I could have prolonged that for so long, but because I've got to do it, because I don't know how long I'm going to be on this earth for, I've just got to go for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I wasn't always like that. I'm the biggest procrastinator ever. See this footage that I film on this GoPro, like I've got footage that I've been sitting on for years and videos that I've been sitting on for years that I haven't uploaded. Whether that's a session of Lewis Capaldi that I shot and it's still not online, or like a video of me filming my GoPro and, do you know what I'm saying?
Are you perfectionist?
Yeah, I think that is what it is. It's a big part of me not releasing stuff. It's because I'm very, and I think that's a bad, that's
and is that,
sort
but does
of bad.
That create in its own way, create fear?
Yeah.
Isn't that all part of? I mean, people who have OCD, it is sort of, my wife has it particularly badly, or maybe I'm just a slob. Maybe
like, I wipe every single toilet seat before I sit down with it, even in my house.
Man,
is that bad?
No, man, you've got to be careful with the toilet, man.
Yeah, no, but
mate,
then.
Mate, trust me, I have been to the toilet. I tell you, this is a true story, right? It's a true story. So when I was out in Afghanistan, one of the last times I went out there, I was out there with Mercy and Forward Recce Platoon and with the Afghan National Army, and we were surrounded. We were getting attacked by the Taliban, and what they do is they fire RPGs and they explode after 100 meters. They starburst. Now what you're not supposed to do is look up at them as they come in, but you look up at it and then it starbursts and people get shrapneled. Anyway, in the middle of this attack, I'd been doing I don't normally smoke, but under a lot of pressure. I did think you didn't know where the next day was going to be your last day. You never knew where you're going to see the sun go.
Exactly.
So like, we've been kicking off for a long time and we were like sort of really under it. And so you used to do this, lick your finger to pull the cigarette out, which is a really disgusting thing to do, right? Particularly when diarrhea and vomiting is going around the pack. So everyone else is putting their hands in that cigarette. So you're basically licking someone else's shit. So next minute, I find myself with a John bag, which is a bag that you carry that you shit in. It's got chemicals in the bottom of it, right? But there's nowhere to go. We're under attack. So what I do is I end up going into this little missile. And there I am filling it. I literally filled it up to flowing, right? But there is, honestly, I'm not joking. There's six hens. There's a rooster. There's about 12 goats and four sheep. And I'm sitting there as these missiles are flying over me going, if this is my last moment on Earth, I'm filling a bag with diarrhea being watched by a number of animals. Quite surreal.
That's mad. That's a way to go.
That's the way to go, buddy. Not in your sleep.
Oh, man.
Have some animal friends when you go, at least.
That is nuts.
There you go. So don't smoke and definitely don't lick your finger.
I don't smoke.
It'd be bad for you, mate, and neither do I. Mm-hmm. Maybe the occasional cigar of success, but so rare now I've got to my age. Let's talk about our skull rings then.
Why
the skulls?
I went into a shop and the line was called Rebel at Heart.
Yeah, man.
And I just loved being rebellious and at heart. That's at my heart.
I think there. I mean, the reason I wear mine is another Afghan thing, and I've told you what it says in the back of it, and we'll sort of like keep that between ourselves. It's all about death and judgment, and that's why it's a judge's thing. But everyone was getting a tattoo, and I was just too much of a wimp to get the tattoo. So
like Ross Kemp, too much of a wimp.
I'm not getting needles either. I've got more puncture holes, trust me. I've had more injections for more things, from Chinese encephalitis. I've actually got malaria. Just didn't want to get the tattoo on the arm. I think it's maybe because I think one day I'm going to go back to acting and a big judge skull.
You're going to go back to acting one day.
Smoking a cigar on my arm is probably going to look a bit ridiculous, particularly with death. Only death shall judge me.
Death before dishonor.
But maybe that's what I think about. I think that's true. You got to it a lot earlier than me about not worrying about being judged. I think you've got through that a lot earlier. And as you say, there's people below you, younger than you, coming up that don't worry about it either. But I think it's to do with the way you're brought up as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like you didn't like telling off older people
because
respect your elders.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe that's also a part and parcel of you that makes
and
you...
And strict. Don't you think it's because your parents are so strict and that is runs through your work? I know it's important, but at the same time, you need to let... Like, I wasn't allowed to play out until a certain age. I remember walking home and you know that film Jack with Robin Williams, R.I.P. Robin Williams?
Never seen it, mate. Like, he was one of my heroes. Now she's watching it.
Like, legend. And basically, he's a man, but he's still a kid inside. And basically, his parents won't allow him outside to play with the other kids. And I remember watching that and I was like, I'm Jack. Like, except for, like, sorry. I'm not the... Do you know what I'm saying? Because they won't let me play out with other kids. And it's like, in the movie...
You start up a new thing. Next time, every kid's going to say, I'm Jack.
In the movie, the kids...
I'm going
to
have a T-shirt. I'm Jack.
That might be a good idea. Like, they're looking at Jack, like, who is he? Like, he's never allowed out. What is he? Who is he? What does he do? And I used to think, like, I was that kid because I see all the kids. I walk home from school.
But maybe that's what kept you safe, man.
I know, and it is in a way, but let me go and experience these things. Because otherwise, when I go out into the world, I'll be crazy. And my mum, because of her parents dying, got kept in till she was about 16, 17. And then I think she went crazy. She told me she went crazy. Mm. Like,
wouldn't you?
I know, but I didn't want to go crazy. I wanted to let me go and like get my like, do you know what I'm saying? Let me go and experience it instead of going out into the world too late and not made my friends from my childhood. Because I was like literally straight home. Homework, studies, not allowed out. And then there was times where I just like hit the roof. I get so angry. I'm not going out.
Don't get out.
I'm going out.
Oh, I'm going out.
No, I'm going out. And that was a big thing that you had to overcome as well.
So much more to overcome though, isn't there?
But I'm interested about how you've managed to take your brand from doing acting into the what made you complete fluke.
I was BBC for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I got asked to go to ITV, and instead of like working every day, I worked 3 or 4 months, 5 months a year, and I was bored. I was under contract to them, and they asked me, after they asked a number of other people, but they rang me up and said, you're the first person we thought of for this job. And I knew they'd already asked AA Gill and a number of other people.
Mm-hmm.
He was a A.A. Gill was a great food columnist for the Times and a brilliant journalist. Anyway, so I agreed to do it. Mm. And like third day in, it's about America's infatuation with firearms and why they've got so many guns compared to Canada, for instance.
I saw that.
Yeah. And I meet a guy who's been shot 27 times.
It's
called Bloodhound, right?
I saw that.
And him really clicked, right? And I met him, and he was the antithesis of what I was seeing on him, because it was MTV then. There was no internet. Mobile phones were in the real infancy. And this guy had been shot 27 times. I went, bullshit. No one's been shot 27 times and survives. Until he lifted his top up and showed me he'd been cranked open twice. He'd taken 4 or 5 9mm in the chest, and then they put one under here, a bunch of Crips, pulled the trigger, taken it of his tongue off, exited here, re-entered here, and lodged into the top of his skull. And like, you know, I'm a kid from Essex. He's a black lad from Compton Heath. And we just got on and we hit it off. And he was an amazing bloke. But he was the antithesis of what I was seeing on MTV. It wasn't glammed up. Mm. He had a very well-oiled AK-47 with bleach on it, so it didn't leave DNA. He had the Smith & Wesson tucked down the back of his trousers. And nay did he have gold route dripping off him. Nay did he have some supermodel with a lowrider or a Ferrari parked outside. He said, if a car slows down and starts shooting, I'll be shooting back. And it would go through the buildings. The houses are only about that thick, full of wood. So you get kids getting shot dead 2 houses behind. Different times now. It's totally changed there. But it was a war zone. And do you know what the most important thing about him was? That he admitted that he was man enough to admit that he was scared. And that had a profound effect on me. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to make gang programs. At that point, I tried to make gang programs. But again, it's not about necessarily what you know, it's who you know. And I luckily knew people at Sky at the time, Jackie, who commissioned the first three. And then after that, changed my life.
You're sick. I am very honored to be here.
No, mate, it's a pleasure.
You're a sick guy.
You're a hero. You are a hero. And that word is a word sometimes overused by some people, but I don't overuse it. I think you have had such a positive effect on so many people. And now I've met you, I understand totally why. The truth, mate.
I want to do some more stuff. I've got like so many ideas that are going through my head. Like when I spoke to my family friend who I was talking about from back in the day, he was like, I want to come. I was like, no, you can't come. This is me and Ross's time, not yours. Like, and I didn't want to like have him come in. And, but it'd be good to, I have ideas that would be sick to
would love to talk about them. But
talk about now, it off camera, innit?
We're talking about it off camera. Yeah. Or you have to come back next time and see me and Jamal talking. Thank you very much, mate. You're a true hero.
My guy, you are as well.
True hero.
My bro. Sick.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Kempcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review. You can find me on Twitter at Ross Kemp and on Instagram at Ross Kemp TV. This has been a Freshwater and the Chancer Collective production. Thanks to the team and One Fine Play. And until the next episode, goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.